The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
All of us have healing work to do on race and culture topics. We have those questions that seem to be unaskable in today's climate. Now, we have a forum where we can ask experts, listen, and share. Welcome to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. Get ready to engage and add your voice to racial healing in the next hour. Let's start right now. Here's Sharon E. Davis.
Oh, welcome to our show once again today. I'm delighted that you have again joined us for another special show on the healing of racism. You know, racism is not our fault. We were born into parts of this story, and today we're going to hear about the stories of others and how they're able to reconcile and dig their way out of this ditch. We all know that we erroneously learned our way into racism, and we will intentionally learn our way out. And you know, you have to believe it to make that happen. The answers really are within us, and exploring and dialoguing and associating with one another helps us find those nuggets and jewels that are so important for our journey together, the journey of a lifetime. Well, today's show is titled, Once Master and Enslaved, Now at the Table. The unspoken secrets can fill the air. The evidence is all around in plain view. You may be a black, white, Native American, or mixed race person with the same last name, the same state of birth, and may even have some of the same physical features. What does a white person do, think, and feel once he or she knows the truth about ancestors who owned human beings? What deep emotions arise when a person of color meets a white person who once enslaved a relative? Do you politely nod and move on, or decide to do something and open the lid on part of our painful U.S. history? Then what? Dr. Martin Luther King dreamed that the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will sit down together at the table. Well, we believe that our table has more chairs than we allow ourselves to think. We have today as our guests Phoebe Kilby, who began this work in racial reconciliation in 2007, and when she first met Betty Kilby Baldwin on Martin Luther King Day. Well, Phoebe's ancestors were slaveholders. Betty is descended from the slaves that Phoebe's family once held. Phoebe and Betty have since become leaders in Coming to the Table. That's an organization which seeks to fulfill Dr. King's dream that the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. Well, Dr. Betty Kilby Baldwin began her journey as a plaintiff in the case of Betty Kilby et al. Versus Warren County Board of Education to open up the local high school to African Americans. Her journey is documented in her book, Wit, Will, and Walls. Her passion is that all mankind or humankind can live, work, and play together in love, peace, and harmony. Well, Betty and Phoebe lead workshops and dialogues on racial reconciliation across the United States, and they do assist others who are interested in improving race relations in our community. Welcome to the show, Phoebe and Betty.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, this is indeed a pleasure because there's so much that we could talk about this journey and especially your journeys together. But let's first start by asking maybe Phoebe yourself, why do you do this work and what possessed you to seek out Betty and talk about history, that taboo in the United States about slavery?
Well, thank you. First of all, I'd like to say thank you, Sharon, for having us on the show and allowing us to tell our stories. And I think both of us are looking forward to hearing some of the questions from the callers and seeing what comes up and how we can work together on racial healing. I thought your introduction was particularly important way of introducing this because it really talks about the silence that's out there. We often don't look at our families' histories, and families are often quiet about what happened. For example, this is my father's family that were enslavers, and I don't remember my father ever mentioning that our family had once held slaves. Mm-hmm. So there was kind of a code of silence. And I remember I grew up actually in Baltimore, Maryland, but my father's family was from Virginia, and that's where Betty was from. And I really didn't know about this until I came to Virginia. I moved there, and I moved to an area where the newspaper covered Front Royal, Virginia, where Betty's family, many of them, lived. And I noticed at that time that there were Kilbys, but they were African American. And, you know, you said, what do you do with that? Well, at first I did nothing, just what you mm-hmm. said. You know, oh, that's interesting. Are we connected? But I was just, I didn't do anything. I just kept on with my life. And I think what inspired me to reach out to Betty was that I became involved. I actually started pursuing a degree at Eastern Mennonite University at the Center for Justice and Peace Building. And while working there, while taking classes there initially, I should say, I learned and met many people around the world who are dealing with justice issues, with conflicts and war between peoples who are divided. Some oppressors, some oppressed. And I learned from so many of these people from around the world, my fellow students and my professors who had addressed some of these problems, how to reach across these lines of division and how to have the courage to do it and how to have the language and a way of thinking about it so that you felt comfortable enough to try it. Because it is a scary thing to think about. I mean, first of all, just to recognize that I came from a family that had been oppressors. When I did the history and discovered this, it was shocking and upsetting. And then you go, you're ashamed about this. And you also look at yourself. And as you said in your introduction, we grow up in racism. And I know I grew up steeped in racism and absorbed this. So how do you have the courage? And I think what it was is I saw so many brave people around the world reaching across divisions. They could be tribal. They could be religious. Many different ways that people are divided. Could be divided through their histories of oppression and being oppressed. And I thought, if they can do it, I should be able to do this. And I just felt like this is something I was personally involved in, and this is where I could make a difference.
Well, that is a fantastic introduction into your journey, Phoebe, and thank you for having the courage to talk about it. Well, you know, Betty, what is your journey? How in the world did you react when you found out that Phoebe was at the table a closer relative than what you may have thought, or maybe you already knew?
I hadn't met Phoebe when Phoebe first sent me the email. And I had just ended a long period of silence when I had written my book. And I had talked about things that we just didn't talk about. Mm-hmm. But I knew that I could not take the information to my grave. When I sit down with my father, to try to get him to look at our history when I was working on a history project some 20 years prior to this time. He cried. He cried.
Is that right?
When he looked at where we came from. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote a little book called Freedom Road. And what I looked at was the free black community, because I didn't want to look at my own history. Mm-hmm. I knew, I have known all my life, I've grown up with the fact that we were descendants of slaves. My grandfather was deeply rooted with that slave mentality.
Mm-hmm.
So when I heard from Phoebe, it was not a piece of new information that I had received. Phoebe has a white cousin, and during the desegregation period, her name was the same as mine, and she made the honor roll. But because of all of the turmoil in my life, I didn't make the honor roll, but I cut her articles out and pretend that that was me. And so it wasn't you to me. I already knew. And after I had written my book, I was going around the country trying to bring the races of people together, talking in high schools, lecturing in high schools, telling people to love and not hate, telling people to sit with somebody that you don't know, take advantage of diversity, and talking about the historical aspect of Brown versus the Board of Education and my role, so that I could incite the kids to get the best out of their education and to realize that education was the key to success. And so when Phoebe contacted me, I was right in the throes of selling and signing my book, that I was excited because now we had an opportunity to live Dr. Martin Luther King's dream. And then when we had a documentary, and when we introduced the documentary, when the documentary premiered, Phoebe and her cousin came, and I was able to stand up and say, and it was during Black History Month, and I was saying, not only do I talk about the dream, but I live the dream. And I introduced Phoebe as my cousin, and we sit down at the table of brotherhood. And I had invited Phoebe to a family dinner because I was so busy, I didn't have time to have Christmas dinner with my family. So here it is, February, and we're planning this family dinner. And before I knew it, I invited Phoebe, and I didn't tell any of the family that she was coming.
Well, I tell you, we're going to go to break right now and come back, because I know we want to hear the rest of that story, too. We'll be right back.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Many people are seeking to make a difference in the world, but few actually have the tools to do so. Every week, host Mary Beth Lodge and her guests will have you thinking forward and will give you the tips to keep your life, goals, priorities, and choices on track. The result is an easier, happier, and more inspired life. The name of the program is What Matters. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. What really matters is the positive changes that you'll bring to your life and the world just by listening. Come back to your senses. Imagine a radio show that will help you recover your common sense. Host Leah Brenda Smith is a health and wellness specialist who will explain techniques designed to help you recover from the stress of your life. It's all about how you respond to your thoughts. A little bit of self-awareness can go a long way in helping you to relax and enjoy your life. Tune in to Come Back to Your Senses Radio, live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Well, welcome back. Welcome back. Our guests today are Betty Kilby Baldwin and Phoebe Kilby. And, you know, before we went on break, Betty, you were talking about who was coming to dinner at one of your relatives that you knew about event. What happened, Betty? Can you pick it up from there?
Well, I called as many of the family members as I could to tell them that I had invited our white cousins to dinner. And I had a whole lot of explaining to do. Not everybody agreed with me, but everybody that was supposed to come did come. And my brother said, "Well, what do they want to take from us now?" But everyone was polite. Everyone was cordial. And Phoebe, I think she purposely came in after we had all sit down. And you know, she was the cutest little white lady you ever did see. And she was just cute. And so everybody just welcomed Phoebe, and they know that I'm the weird one in the family, so you could expect something interesting coming from me. But they all accepted, and even today, not every member of my family believes in what we're doing. They think we should still be full of hate. We should still be full of mistrust. But that's okay because, you know, time brings about a change. So we're just waiting for them to, you know, to change and to come along. And my brother and Phoebe has worked on a lot of projects together since that time.
Well, this is just really astounding, and I know that you have more to tell. You know, Phoebe, this kind of gets us back also to the fact that both you and Betty have been doing this work or work related to it for quite some time. You just didn't start out all of a sudden meeting each other on this journey and working from there. But, you know, Phoebe, for you first, what is it like when you meet someone who really is a closer cousin than what you might imagine? What do you, from a European-American or white Caucasian person, what do you do with that and think and feel once you know the truth about your ancestors? What do you do? How did you navigate all that?
Well, that's a good question. One thing that was very helpful is Betty is such a warm and welcoming person. She made it I wouldn't say easy for me, but she made it so that I could navigate this. And you know, when you're making this kind of connection, you feel all kinds of different emotions. You think about all the times that you've had racist thoughts and your own racism. You think about what your family did, and you feel, you know, ashamed. And then at the same time, you want to make things better. This is what I wanted to do. I wanted to somehow make things better, but I wasn't quite sure how to do that, how to talk, how to say things so that what I said wouldn't be offensive. And I'm still working on that. You know, what's a good language to use? You think about things like just the using the words. Should it be slave owner, slave holder, enslaver? Can you say somebody is a slave, or you say they were enslaved? I mean, they're just using your, what's the proper language or the best language to use that is healing as opposed to causing offense? So you're thinking about that constantly. And I remember we had a gathering of others who have done this, gone through this journey, descendants of enslavers and the enslaved, at Eastern Mennonite University. This was early on. This was in 2008. And Betty had a moment in our class and our meeting there where she really became, she kind of broke down and was very upset about something. She was recalling some of the troubling times she had during the civil rights era. And I'm sitting beside her, and I think she's crying, and I want to hug her. I want to comfort her. But would she want somebody who's descended from the enslaver to touch her at this moment? I mean, I just didn't know what to do. These are the kind of thoughts that go through your head when you're trying to do this. Lucky for me, one of the other African Americans in the group said, let's go and give Betty a big group hug. And all the African Americans got up and gave her this group hug, and that kind of let me off the hook. But it was really, you feel unsure of yourself and uncomfortable. But time begins to help. And over time, Betty and I think, have become far more comfortable with each other, to the point where we can talk about lots of different things. And I've just, you know, admitted things to her, thoughts that I've had, things that my family did over time. And we talk about them. And that brings us closer, because we're pursuing the truth. We're not hiding this truth anymore. But it does take time. Because we first met in 2007, and here we are in 2012. It's 5 years later, and it's taken time to work through this.
I imagine that it has. These are deep emotional reactions and realities about family histories, especially in this country. Well, Betty, what deep emotions arise when, for you, or as a person of color, when you meet a white person or a European American who once enslaved a relative or your ancestors? How did you react to that?
Well, the episode that Phoebe was talking about, when I got a breakthrough, you know, as an African American person, you're taught to love, you're taught to forgive, you're not allowed to hate. And during the course of that meeting, I had a pretty tough time during desegregation.
Mm-hmm.
I got raped. Mm-hmm. It was just a horrid experience. And I went to the Coming to the Table session to share my story, to lead other people through the healing process. But at that moment I just broke down, I realized that I still had open wounds. So how could I help to heal somebody else when I was still broken? Mm-hmm. And we were sitting around talking about these little trivial things. What should we call each other? How should we say enslaver, or how should we say enslaved? And all of a sudden, there was such a bigger issue at hand. Mm-hmm. I was still broken, and I wanted to heal. Mm-hmm. And I had gone through this circle of healing. And that was when I realized and began to admit to myself, oh, girl, you're so deceitful, because you're trying to help everybody else to heal, and you're still so broken. And I kept going around that circle and around that circle. And all of a sudden, I was back into the past, and I couldn't break away from the circle.
And so, in
coming to the table, you know, while I still cry, while the pain is still there is no hate in my heart. There is forgiveness in my heart. But sometimes, and it's not what Phoebe's family did to me. It's not what enslavement did to me. It was what I went through when I desegregated the schools. When the school board, the governor closed the schools. And so that was my healing process. That was something that I had to do and get out of my system to begin to talk about it. Because a lot of times what we do is we say what is politically correct. And we don't allow ourselves, you know, to just kind of let go. And that's what I did that day. I just kind of let go, because it just came on me and I was overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. But it is still a deeply rooted emotional thing. Just as the emotion that my dad felt years after the history and years after his mother had died, I saw what pain he felt when we sit there in front of that screen and he was reading, you know, the information about how old man Dick Finks had signed, you know, for his mother and father to get married, and slavery was completely over. And, you know, when he realized that his oldest brother, Charles, was not, he didn't know whether it was his father's child or not. He just knew that when Charles was born, his mother was not married to his father. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's emotional. It definitely is emotional. But sometimes we have to cry until there are no more tears left to cry. Mm-hmm. And then comes the rationale. Then comes just the love that is inside of us that we just let pour. You know, people don't realize that Dr. Martin Luther King's dream didn't just stop with the sons and daughters of former slaves and former slaveholders coming to the table of brotherhood. He created in 1957 the SCLC to help create the beloved community.
Mm-hmm.
He had the vision that after all that we had gone through, all of the pain, all of the fighting and everything that we'd gone to, through, that his dream was to create the beloved community. And that's what Phoebe and I represent at Coming to the Table. And that's why it made sense for the work that I was doing with the history part of our history, with the historical part of our history, and then creating the beloved community. Because that's how our work blended together.
Well, that's just really outstanding, and it's a very courageous story as well. And when we talk about courage and what is today and what was yesterday, we had a caller, Aziz from Kansas City, who is an ardent listener to this show. And these are some of his comments and questions, and hopefully we'll have time to address most of this before we go to break. And Aziz says, the ones that are doing it today have been doing it all along. How are you going to fix the atrocities of what's happening now? What is your opinion on how to stop what is happening today? What factual solutions can you offer to the general public on how to stop it? The level of brutality the Europeans brought here is still here. How to stop the oppression from the oppressor? What do you know about that? You can talk feelings, but love ain't going to get it. Would either one of you like to respond to that?
You know, I beg his difference. Love will get it. Because as long as you hold on to that hate, hate's going to destroy us. That's what's destroying us right now today is the hate. And what's the opposite of the hate? Is love. Love is creative. Love is redemptive. Just like you, Dr. Martin Luther King said, love unites us. You know, we're going to have to lay down the guns. We're going to have to lay down the knives. We're going to have to lay down the bad words, the bickering and the backbiting, and we can do it. But we don't want to. We have to want to stop it. We have to want to create the beloved community. And until we get it in our heads, we won't do it. It's just like when I was going through integration of the schools. The laws made them take us into the schools. They took us into the schools and they brutally just did terrible things to us and said terrible things to us. You know, if it wasn't for God in my life, I'd probably be crazy about now, even though some people think we are. But we've got to want to do it. As long as we can sit around and point fingers and say, here's the problem. We've been doing this all our lives. We're never going to fix it. And he's absolutely right. We're never going to fix it until we make a determination to fix it. And what we do is we change people one person at a time. When we have our sessions and we get people to talking and let it out, just like I did that day when I broke down. And that's the only way that we're going to do it. I can look out and I can see it. I can see it all over where people still want to hold on to that hate. They still want to hold on to those old feelings and those ideas. You know, so all I can say to them is come to the table. If you want to truly lay down those barriers, if you want to truly create a beloved community, come lay it all down at the table. And I guarantee you'll be the better for it. Our nation will be the better for it.
Well, on that note, we're going to go to break and we will be right back.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Each week, Jimmy Gould brings you the stories and the people that you want to hear about. Tune in to A Current Life to hear about the journey to success, how our guests became the people they are today, and the highs and lows they experienced along the way. Each hour will leave you inspired and entertained as Jimmy gets up close and personal with every week's guest and shares ideas you can identify with and apply to your own life. A Current Life with Jimmy Gould airs Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Well, thank you once again for being back with us. And we have as our guests today Phoebe Kilby and also Betty Kilby Baldwin. And before we went on break, Betty was talking about one of the listeners' questions and comments from Aziz from Kansas City about building the beloved community was Betty's response to that and how it's so important to heal and to build Martin Luther King Jr.'s beloved community if we choose to do so. If we choose to do so. Well, Phoebe, do you have any brief comments on that?
Well, I think the person with the question was really saying, when are you going to do something? It's not all just about relating to each other. Mm-hmm, and I think coming to the table actually has worked out an approach to racial reconciliation. And the first steps are geared toward building relationships. And that's facing the truth and uncovering our history, not letting that silence continue, making the connections across racial lines, such as the email and that I sent to Betty and her response, and then working toward healing together. And that's talking and listening to each other and doing things together. But the last thing we talk about also is the goal eventually is to get toward taking action. It's building relationships so that it's whites and blacks, African Americans and European Americans working together to make change. And that is really important. And but Betty referred to a few projects that I've been doing with her brother. And if it comes up again, I can tell you those are some examples of how we've taken small steps, but they are actions to try to improve things.
Mm-hmm. So both of you are committed to the action part of the healing of racism with coming to the table. But it sounds like you're saying that it's built on a foundation of love or loving regard for one another as opposed to hate and contention and a lot of overt tension. Is that
true?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I tell you, there's so much more that we could talk about, and some of our listeners would want to know something simple as, do European Americans apologize to people of color, or in this case, African Americans at the table? And if so, is it accepted or acceptable? How does that part work? Phoebe, does that happen, or is it not considered part of the process?
Oh, well, I think it's not something that can be forced, but I personally feel it's something that needs to be done. And some of our members have apologized. And I have tried to apologize to Betty, But Betty really won't let me very well. I mean, I want to apologize. I said I apologize for my family. Role in slavery and having enslaved her ancestors, and I express regret and want to make amends for this. I also want to apologize for my own personal racism. But Betty, why don't you tell her what your response was when I tried to do this?
Oh, I want to hear this. Betty.
In the first place, Phoebe did not personally do anything to me that required apologizing for. Mm-hmm. Now, she can apologize for what her ancestors did, but not Phoebe personally. And the poor girl works to show her love and to prove her love and to prove her regrets. When I was going around the world selling and signing my book with Will and Walls, I had the first individual that came up to me, and he looked me eyeball to eyeball, and he said, I want to apologize to you for what my people did to you during desegregation. Mm-hmm. And I was speechless. I was speechless because I said to myself, what do you say? Because, you know, usually you'll say, oh, it's okay, or I accept your apology. But the very first time I heard an apology, I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to feel. And then it's like all the rage just kind of builds up in you. Mm-hmm. And so I went home that night and I prayed to God. I said, show me the way. Show me what I'm supposed to feel. And so the very next time someone apologized to me, I said, it was God's journey for me. It was God's journey for me. This is what God had put in place. So therefore, I take out of the hands of anything that anybody has done to me personally, and I leave it in God's hands. Because it says, because my faith tells me that this joy I have, the world didn't give it to me, and the world can't take it away from me. And so it's mine. It came from God. It's a gift from God. So I let God handle all of those problems and everything that was wrong. So I don't have to handle it. So I just tell people, that was God's journey for me. That was God's journey for me because he brought me to this place for this change that we are about to encounter.
So you most certainly are, both of you, so forward-looking. And I want to introduce this comment that came in from an email from one of our listeners. And it's anonymous, but it says, this is a very bad subject line. And I think that they're referring to the title of this show today, which is Once Master and Enslaved, Now at the Table. And then this writer goes on to say, you should say black and white or something like that. Using master and enslaved sounds like you still believe your own stories. Any reaction to that, either one of you?
That was the exact discussion that we were having the day that I got my breakthrough.
Because, is that right?
You know, while we can take the focus off the problem and put it on the piddly little things like the master slave, the black and white, you know, whatever rocks your boat, it's what we're looking for, you know. Mm-hmm. So if it's suits that individual better to say, oh, it should have been in black and white. Well, that's fine. If it was in black and white, it would have been okay with me. If it says, mm-hmm. once master, once enslaved, we're talking about our families. We're not talking about Phoebe, and we're not talking about me. And I guess I'm so close to it. You know, they say you can't see the forest from the trees.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, so I'm so close to it that I automatically knew that we were talking about the past, and what we're doing now is the future.
Well, that is just wonderful. It really is, because there's so much work to still do, an incredible amount of work to still do. And, you know, speaking of that, there's another email from one of our listeners, and this is from Ron in Dallas, Texas. Ooh. And he says, given the mantra put forth by Jewish people, We Will Never Let You Forget, and the success of South African Truth Commissions is that the accepted strategy of the United States to not talk about slavery because it is painful and it is designed to minimize it and its aftermath. I want to say that again, that he's saying that it's the strategy of the U.S. not to talk about slavery because it is painful and it's designed to minimize it and its aftermath, versus providing an understanding and reconciliation. Well, now you all are going to be speaking for all the United States, I guess, right? But do you have a response to that? What do you think?
I think I'd like to respond to that. This is Phoebe. And Betty and I have spoken in a lot of different places and have had some articles published. And often we'll get comments where people will say, slavery's in the past, get over it.
Oh, yeah.
Don't bother with this. And I feel like it's there's a tendency in the U.S., and I can't speak for the U.S., you know, completely, but there's a tendency to want to hide any flaws in our national history, any problems that we might have done. There's a tendency to want to make the U.S. always look as being in the right and powerful and the best country in the world. But we're like all other peoples. We have done things that were not right, and slavery is one of them. And slavery was an essential part of the entire U.S. economy before 1865. It wasn't just the South. The South had most of the slaves, but the Northern economy was also dependent on a lot of the agricultural products of the South for their industries. They used the cotton for their weaving. So the whole country was complicit in this. But I think there's a level in terms of European Americans, white folks, that don't want to face up to this and just want to cover it, and it's part of the silence. Just put it away and not own up to it. I personally believe, I can't force anybody to feel this way, but I personally believe that we ought to own up to that history, and as the South Africans did, tell the truth and let that truth come out and work toward reconciliation. And part of reconciliation is attending to the justice issues. And I'm talking about the injustice of slavery and all the injustices that have happened since through Jim Crow and even today, the fact that we have a huge number of African Americans incarcerated is just, mm-hmm. It's a continuation. And we need to own up to this and work on trying to make amends and heal our society, because we still are far away, I have to say, from that beloved community. But I think to get to the beloved community, we have to own up to the history and own up and realize that slavery occurred and it was harmful, and there's a legacy to that that needs to be addressed.
You know, I know that today we're not going to be able to solve or answer everything, but Aziz has called our production engineer and has another comment, and maybe before we go to break we might be able to get to it a bit. And it says the non-oppressors, which I think means people of color, still need protection from the oppressors with the guns. So maybe we can talk about that in the context of a comment that certainly today racism is still very much alive, very much alive, and has not ended for us. And since we only have 30 seconds, I'm going to have us go to break first and then come back and see how we're going to end the show. We're almost finished with our show, if you can believe it. We're talking with our guests today, Phoebe Kilby and Betty Kilby Baldwin from Coming to the Table, and we'll be right back.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Ever wondered what private investigators really do and how they go about solving cases? Each week, PIs Declassified gives a glimpse into this little-known world. Join your host, Francie Kaler, a noted private investigator, in conversations with detectives and experts in the field. False confessions, forensic evidence, finding missing persons, exposing fraud, exonerating the innocent. All areas that Francie and her guests will cover. And have they got stories to tell? Tune in and call in to the live show Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Oh, welcome back to our show again. Our guests today are Betty Kilby Baldwin, author and advocate, and Phoebe Kilby, director and peace builder. And before we went on break, we were talking about parts of what the pathology is and all the things that are very, very painful about racism in our country and why we don't acknowledge it. And one of the last comments was about, well, the non-oppressors still need protection and all of that. Well, you know, in large part, you, both of you, are working on the future and working very hard on that with Coming to the Table. Can you tell us a little bit more about what Coming to the Table is and what are your intentions with this particular organization?
Well, this is Phoebe, and both Betty and I are on the board of Coming to the Table, and I'm currently president, so I thought maybe I would say a little bit about Coming to the Table as an organization, and Betty, then you can chime in and cover anything I missed. Coming to the Table is started off as an organization of descendants of enslavers and the enslaved, and has brought in a lot of other people who are just interested in racial reconciliation. And our mission is to provide leadership and resources and a supportive environment for all those who wish to acknowledge and heal wounds from racism that is rooted in the United States history of slavery. And we have a website, www.comingtothetable.org, where you can find out more about our group. And you can join. We have various social networking sites where we share information and connect to each other. We have a Facebook page, and we have a listserv where people post comments on the Internet. And we have daily, constant conversations about the kinds of questions that have come up in today's show. So it's like this show extending over time. Every day there are questions posed by people and sharing of information. So, for example, I said there are sort of four practices that we use to try to work on racial reconciliation: uncovering history, making connections, working toward healing, and taking action. So, for example, people will post questions on the Facebook page or our listserv about uncovering history. They'll tell a story of something they researched and found out about. We have many authors in our group, and they tell us about the books they've just published. One of them is Henry Weinseck, who is a member of our group, and he just wrote the book about Jefferson, Master of the Mountain. Mm-hmm. So we have people like that. So people will tell their history. They will also share tips on how to do the research. So that's one of the activities. And then in terms of making connections across racial lines, people will tell stories, well, I just figured out who my cousin is, or who might be some descendants of my enslavers. How do I go about contacting them? What should I do? And so we try to support each other in making these contacts and providing advice. And you can actually, you know, we have people who are available for people who would like to call and get advice on, you know, people who have actually made connections to, because that's what I did. Before I met Betty, I talked to another person at Coming to the Table who had already made a connection across the racial lines, and they gave me some advice. So it was wonderful support. And then when we say work toward healing, we have conference calls where we dialogue and discuss issues and listen to each other. And when we have local groups in various areas of the country. We have one that meets in Richmond, one in New York, New Jersey area, one in San Francisco Bay area, one in Seattle, Washington. It's just sort of where people are. And those groups meet and they talk about their journey, and they have rituals and ceremonies and use the arts, talk about apology. That's the way we work toward healing. And then taking action, these groups that are meeting in local areas have community projects that they're involved in. And I have been involved in projects with Betty's brother, for example, to, you know, she's talked about her civil rights activity, and this was in 1958 and 59. Well, 2009, we held anniversary ceremony of the integration of the school, where we invited the whole community and honored Betty and her brothers and others who had integrated that school. And then we also followed up by getting an historic sign, a Virginia Department of Historic Resources, big metal sign put up outside the school telling their history so that people will know what happened there. And in perpetuity, their father's name is up there and describe his bravery. So those are some of the community actions we've taken. So that's a little bit about Coming to the Table. We have lots of resources on our website, a manual, for example, that describes this process that I've talked about. It's called Transforming Historical Harms, and it shows you how you can use these four steps to change your life and your relationships.
Well, that is really, really astounding. Betty, is there something that you would like to add?
Yeah, in Phoebe and my Coming to the Table sessions that we do, we talk about our story because it's kind of unlikely that we would end up being friends, because everything about our past is so different. And so we tell our story, and then we invite people to come to the table to tell their story. And because our story is rather bizarre, people will say, if they can tell their story, then I can too. And healing doesn't start until we cut that wound and open it up and began to talk about what is festering inside of us. And we've been very successful in our Coming to the Table sessions.
Well, it sounds like it. Now, I have to say something. And, you know, when I first saw your pictures, because, you know, your bios are out on the website and with Voice America, I said, well, they look alike. Yeah. They look, do you ever hear that? That's what I want to know. Do you ever hear that you look alike to me?
Yes, and we did, Phoebe has a profile of a picture of her father and a picture of my father. And if you looked at that picture, you might say, Kilby's in black and white.
Well, that brings up another question in the little time that we have left. Now, this is around primarily Coming to the Table with enslavement and slavery and all of that. Is there room for Native Americans and others who were at some point involved in this process? Quickly, about 30 seconds.
We've had Native Americans who have come to our session, and is part of their storytelling and a part of our storytelling process. that they tell their story. And so we don't limit it to just people who are part of the coming to the part of the dream, Martin Luther King's dream of the sons and daughters of former slaves and former slaveholders coming to the table of brotherhood. Anybody that needs healing comes to our table.
Oh, that's just wonderful. I kind of thought so, but I just wanted to make sure that our listening audience knew about that as well. Well, once again, the website for Coming to the Table is www.comingtothetable.org, and you all have done just a fantastic job and a very honorable and committed job with this work. And it sounds like that although all the pain is not gone, that your eyes are directed to the future. Is that right?
That's correct.
Absolutely.
Well, you all have been just great to share your stories at a deep level, and thank you so much for joining us today. Phoebe Kilby and Betty Kilby Baldwin, who look like cousins to me. We'll see you next time.
Thank you again for listening today. Please join host Sharon E. Davis for another edition of A Safe Place to Talk About Race next Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll talk then.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.